Becker on Darren Donick and Chase, presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD products curated for life. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you here on this Tuesday morning. Hope everyone is having a good start to your day. Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert, is on the line with us. Paul, good morning. Thanks for doing this. As always, we're going to have you join into our conversation that we had in the first segment of the show today and yesterday's show, because it continued last night in the Louisville-Ole Miss game. What do you think ultimately, or let me phrase it this way, do you think college football has a problem on their hands with the targeting rule?
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't be talking about it today, but we are. And
yep.
I mean, I'm not a rules expert, and neither are you guys, and I've talked, but we've all talked to enough of them, and I just don't know how you solve it. I mean, it's so subjective, and it's so punitive. I mean, I understand the intent, but then every time we talk to a rules expert, they make sure we know why the rule is there, but it just always seems to destroy the flow of the game and impact the game.
Do you think ultimately, because, I mean, we talked about the three of us were together on Saturday. We were doing a fantasy football draft. We were watching the Penn State-Wisconsin game. There was some bad targeting calls, in our opinion, in there that took out some key players. Joel Klatt was going crazy on the rule. Kirk Herbstreit was massaging it a little bit better than Joel did on Saturday. But still, both basically saying that they've got to do something about it. Do you think if the announcers, if the broadcast crew continues to say stuff throughout the course of the season, that might force their hand or no?
Yeah. What I think is going to be interesting is whether you'll continue to hear the announcers talking about it. And I say that because I know how network television works. It's important that those guys are arguably the two most influential voices on a game that you can get. So they were heard, and what happens is the average fan who couldn't explain the rule in a million years hears that and go, this must be a stupid rule. So that's positive. Now we'll see what Steve Shaw is a friend of mine, used to be a neighbor. He's the head of the officials for the entire country. Let's see what he has to say about it now.
Yeah, good point. Your takeaway last night, did the worst defense in the country last year massively improve in Ole Miss, or was Louisville's offense, do they just stink? Or is it a little bit of both? What do you think it is?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question Ole Miss got better. Because, I mean, they were giving up points and yards last year to nearly average teams. But I am almost hesitant to make too many value judgments on anything I see this year against the ACC. Because it was such an embarrassing weekend for that league. And, you know, you don't know really where to go. Where is Louisville ranked? I mean, not very high. So I give Ole Miss credit. I mean, they're going. We knew they were going to be a great offensive team. We just didn't think they could stop anyone. They did stop, an average team last night, which is more than they did last year. So I think that is a significant moment for that program.
Saturday night, watched out in L.A., watched UCLA have their way for the most part, really. I thought they were the better team. They deserved to win over LSU. What does this mean for Ed Orgeron and the Tigers moving forward, that loss to the Bruins?
It puts them in dire straits. And I know that sounds absurd on the day after Labor Day, but, you know, you look at they had to win their four games, and, you know, most LSU fans – figured that was a win, and the only games that they were conceding were probably Alabama and maybe at Texas A&M, and now everything is in play. We're talking about a game in 2 weeks from Saturday in Starkville as a critical game, and that shows you how tenuous Ed Orgeron's life raft is, and I don't like to pile on a program that, like so many people in this country, have suffered badly because of this hurricane a week ago, but we're talking football here. And, you know, struggle or no struggle, bad week of practice or no bad week, it was another embarrassing opener for a guy whose credibility is being shattered by the game.
Yeah. We also discussed this yesterday, Paul. I don't know what they can do about it. I feel like they're trying. You know, in 2016, they played USC to start their season. They beat them 52-6. In 2017, they played Florida State, beat them 24-7. I mean, that's compared to the Miami-Florida game. That's pretty good. The next year, they played Louisville, beat them 51-14, smoked Duke the next year. Obviously, there was no out-of-conference game last year. We talked about, I think it was 2012, they played Michigan. I mean, they're trying, but is there any game Alabama could schedule that's going to, you know, they look good on paper to start the season, but they end up not being games?
No, and there's almost nothing left. you could have put them against Clemson or Ohio State or Oklahoma, but you know, quite frankly, we've seen these games already.
Yep.
I think at this moment, Alabama is in a different league, and you know, we had question marks. The question marks were very simple. Could Bryce Young adapt without the same complement of first round picks that Mac Jones had last year? The answer, yes. Now, you know, back to a previous statement. What's Miami? I mean, they were a ranked team. They were supposed to be good. They weren't against Alabama. But there's just almost no way to know until you see Alabama play a really good team. And the good news, that comes soon. That comes a week from Saturday. Alabama's schedule is very top-heavy this year. They play at the Swamp a week from the Saturday, and then in 5 weeks they play at Texas A&M. That's when we'll know for sure, but I think we already do.
You know what's interesting is for a long time we kept trying to figure out, you know, who is it? Is it Bill Belichick or is it Tom Brady? Who's really behind a dynasty run for almost two decades? Well, it may still be a little premature, and maybe there isn't a right answer. Maybe it was the combination of both. But Tom Brady went away and he won the Super Bowl, and Bill Belichick didn't even make the playoffs. And who knows if Mac Jones changes that narrative this year. But how do, with what you just said, because you're right, they're just different than everybody else, Alabama. It's amazing. But they don't have that same quarterback for almost two decades. Like, they change players all the time, and I get it. They keep bringing in five-star. But Nick Saban is the best ever. But what is it, truly, how have they been able to sustain this type of dynasty run for this long in college football?
At some point, the in the age of the CFP, we have seen just a handful of teams who now profit, and they're the same ones that we see in the playoffs every year. And Alabama has just mastered it a little bit better. The amount of great players that are going there is higher than it's been at any time. I mean, you could pick your poison. Maybe 10, 12 years ago, Saban's first recruiting class was epic with Julio Jones and other players. But now they are literally going out and choosing players, and they're making the right choice. And the most important position, let me sound like every analyst in the world, is the quarterback position, and they haven't missed. Jalen Hurts was a legitimate quarterback. He got replaced by an even better guy, and you can debate whether Mac Jones was even better. He wasn't really even anybody Alabama wanted badly. He was just somebody that, you know, they mildly recruited, and he decided, you know, I want to go there. Bryce Young was in the same class with some of the top players we have right now, and it just, you know, he's developed. You've got great coordinators. You know, say what you want about O'Brien, but as an NFL head coach, but you know, he's certainly adept at the system. And the biggest change for Alabama that we saw for the first three quarters, and I think we'll see most of the year, is the defense. Nick Saban has not had an elite defense in probably 9, 10 years, and we think he has that now. And you can afford losses. Yeah, every school suffers losses the first couple weeks of the season. Alabama lost a linebacker the other day. They can afford it, and not many other schools can.
We're talking to Paul Finebaum, and once again, he's brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. So, Paul, I'm desperately looking for new blood here, but I don't know if you're going to tell me that there is any. We've already mentioned, we know Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, the usual suspects. Is there any new blood that could jump in there and have a great season and be in this mix?
You could see Iowa State. They have a huge game this weekend. Cincinnati or a couple of schools, Texas A&M. But we just don't know yet. And even if they make it, does it really matter, I think is the better question.
Yes.
And you know, if you look at a snapshot of 1 week, and I think it's dangerous, but hey, what are we supposed to do? That's all we have as a sample. There look like two elite teams right now, and that's Alabama and Georgia. And Georgia didn't even play. I mean, Georgia played a miserable offensive game, but that's all they needed to do. Kirby Smart, with a number of wide receivers and tight ends out, and a couple of other players, he gambled. He said, "You know what? I'm going to try to win this game on defense." It worked out because Clemson's offense was a total mess against an elite defense, which they don't play normally. When you beat up on Wake Forest and Boston College and Syracuse as your daily ACC diet, you get fat in a hurry.
This is something that I thought about, and I don't know if I'm just making too much of a couple featured games, because Wisconsin-Penn State, you could see a defensive battle possibly beforehand. I just didn't think I would see a Clemson team struggle to score at all. You know, it's not like we saw the kid play last year, Uyunglele. So do you think defenses are getting any better? Are they catching up to the trends that we're seeing now with the spread game and some of the innovations that we're seeing around college football?
Well, I think the Nick Sabans, the Kirby Smarts, and the Dabo Sweeners are now recruiting a little bit differently, yes. And that was Saban's problem early on. What he loved just simply didn't work. You know, for the spread. And yeah, I think naturally there's an overreaction on Clemson. One thing about Clemson, they lost a coordinator to USF a couple of years ago, and you have to wonder about that. Clemson hardly ever loses a major coach, and you know, has that had an effect? Maybe it has. It also just seems like they don't have the weapons that they had last year. And by the way, why should they? They lost ATN, who was one of the better runners in the country. They lost the best player in college football last year in Trevor Lawrence, and that's just starting. We get so hung up on hype before the year, and part of it's we love college football. We have really nothing. It's not like we have a draft. It's not like we have a preseason. So we just obsess over these narratives, and a handful of people create the narrative, and we all follow along.
Talking to Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. You mentioned Georgia and being without some players. I know Kirby did address that, that he called it a major spike that they've had, and a lot of those players are vaccinated too, so who knows who will be available for this weekend's game. I mean, is this a major concern just because of what we talked about last week, because of the rules that are in place about forfeiting games if you can't play?
I think it is a concern at Georgia, and it's a subject that none of us really want to talk about, and that's COVID, because we talked about it for a year, and we're exhausted from it, but it's still a real problem, And I think Georgia, hopefully has contained it. I mean, the good news is they're playing UAB, and I'm not disrespecting UAB. They're a really good program, but Georgia, even shorthanded, should be able to eke out a win against this program. So I hope it would just be unconscionable to see this game go by the wayside for Georgia, but that's where we are right now in college football.
Looking at some games for this weekend, and we talked a little bit about Tennessee and Joe Milton's debut, Josh Heupel's debut. I've watched this line move quite a bit. Pittsburgh now a 3.5-point favorite in Knoxville, as they'll honor Johnny Majors, which I think is going to be very cool. But, I mean, what's the concern level of Pittsburgh going into Knoxville and potentially beating Tennessee as Josh Heupel tries to get things on track here?
Well, I think by the end of Saturday afternoon, we're going to know the direction of Tennessee football for this year, and I feel pretty good about it. But I don't think they can have a really good season without this win. This is must, because we know they're going to get trapped in the SEC. We know there's three or four games that they're just not going to be in. I think this is a winnable game right now. I like their chances. I have no earthly idea what I'm basing that on. because I didn't see a lot on Thursday night that really made me feel good, but I also don't think a lot of the Pitt program, and I just think I saw enough from Tennessee that they can score some points. Maybe they can make a couple of stops. It won't be easy, but at the moment, it's Tuesday. I like Tennessee.
Yeah, Paul, I'm going to be honest with you. My reaction after a win Friday morning was, okay, I saw what Joe Milton did. What did the other two do in practice that wasn't good enough? Because, I mean, some of those throws that he didn't make, I was like, oof. You know, try doing that against, you know, a big-time SEC defense.
Yeah, I think the problem is that as much as – I mean, I love this cliche that we often use, well, the coach – knows more than we do. Not always. I can tell you that I heard some LSU people telling me, they were sorry Miles Brennan got hurt. They really were. I mean, he was a good player. They hated to see T.J. Finley leave, but they felt like they finally got the right quarterback in Max Johnson. Now, I don't know what they saw, but the Max Johnson I saw Saturday night, didn't get the job done. So sometimes you don't know. We've all seen that, where the guy – who nobody gave a shot gets gets thrown in there. So I think the pressure of the moment was a lot. Now Thursday night against Bowling Green, don't laugh. But I think now that that's past him, I think it will get easier. Even though the competition will be dramatically tougher.
He is Paul Feinbaum of the SEC Network and ESPN. Paul, we appreciate the time as always, and we'll do it again next week.
I just want to thank you for not asking me about Vanderbilt.
Well,
let's bury that for this week.
I mean, we got
there's,
you.
There's nothing more you could add that we haven't already said. Yeah.
No, I'm just so relieved because I have great respect for Clark Lee, and I hate that he may be driving through town today listening. And I am so glad I don't have to offer a comment on that. Guys, thank you. I hate to run.
Well, he's coming on at 1,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, we got him at 1 today, so.
Well, please wish him well and tell him not to buy any green bananas.
Thanks, Paul.
See you guys.
Well, we will have Clark Lee at 1 o'clock. Good stuff from Paul Feinbaum. And, I mean, honestly, we didn't talk about it at length yesterday because what is there to really say at length? It's one game, and we'll see how they recover. But we will talk about it a little bit later, and we will talk to Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee at 1 o'clock. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next.